This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Wes, how are we doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I am spectacular, and ever since getting that needle in my knee, I feel like a million bucks. I swear to you, I actually sleep now. I've had like three nights in a row where I've actually gotten more than 5 hours of sleep. My knees feel good. Okay. I can get up and down the steps without pain. Go out with the hounds, regardless of rain or shine, a lot of rain. I feel good,
feel like,
man.
You can run the streets?
I feel like I can run with the bulls. Take me to Pamplona. I am ready to roll. I feel good. I swear, I kid you not, ever since that needle into the knee, because I was playing in pain for a long time, I feel so good.
Sure.
I do. Feel so good. Well, yeah. We got a lot to talk about.
Yes, we do. We'll get to it here in just a second. I want to bring you up to speed. I got a phone call not long after the show ended yesterday.
10:05.
From Steve Shutt. No, Steve Shutt called. Remember, Steve used to work at Wake Forest, recently retired, now told me he's doing some work with minor league baseball in the High Point area.
Nice.
It was good to hear from Steve, who was watching our show and wanted to let me know that February 17th yesterday was not just Michael Jordan and Jim Brown, but that two of the legendary Wake Forest football coaches were also born on February 17th. How about this? Same day, two of the winningest coaches in Wake Forest football history.
Jim Grobe?
D.C. P. Head Walker. And Jim Grobe.
How about that?
Both born on February 17th. So that's now four people on February 17th.
So we had
impact in the ACC. And I'm sure we could come up with more.
So that is a strong ACC. I said yesterday it might be the best ACC combo imaginable with Jim Brown, Michael Jordan. Now you're giving me P. Head Walker and Jim Grobe. That's a strong day. That's a strong day.
That's a strong ACC day. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So thanks to Steve Shutt for the phone call. Appreciate you watching the show. And thanks for letting us know that. Also of note yesterday, BPI in the three games played went 2-1.
Yeah, but so what?
Really, BPI never lost.
Wait a minute. Wait. Time out. I was on the air with Dockich yesterday on Off Campus. By the time I said good night, we'll catch everybody on the Thursday, before I could get to the first step to go upstairs to have dinner with my lovely wife, Amy, BPI was already 0-1. I hadn't even gotten off the air yet, and BPI had a losing record. It was the only game that was interesting. All right, I mean, North Carolina was a big favorite. Duke was a favorite. By the way, the Blue Devils looked pretty good last night. We're going to get into that.
But BPI. Blue Devils. Mighty Blue Devils, Robin. Mighty Blue Devils.
And here's the other thing, too. NC State, Wolfpack Nation. Right, listen, this is why I said yesterday, I'm the worst in the world at picking games. This is why I like to make fun of BPI. NC State, Wolfpack Nation, listen to me. Anytime you are down the dumps, anytime you think, you know what, it can't get worse, anytime you look around and say, God, it's been forever since we won a game of note. Anytime you're sick and tired of your North Carolina or Duke or Wake Forest buddies at the water cooler giving you grief, here's what I want you to think of. I want you to think of Pittsburgh, NC State, because every single time it seems like NC State plays Pitt, I don't care what it's in, State wins. They've now beaten the Panthers 11 times in a row. Wes, you had the football game this fall, right? Pitt's ranked. Mm-hmm. Pat Narduzzi's got them rocking and rolling. NC State comes rolling in there. Hasn't beaten a ranked team on the road in 100 years. Guess what happens? No problem. No timeouts. Man. Let's go right down the field. Touchdown. Enjoyed it. Let's go grab our Bojangles and head home. NC State simply owns Pittsburgh. So Wolfpack Nation, just keep that in mind. The next time you're down the dumps, we can't have nice things. We don't have this. They got that. We can't get a break. Calls are against us. The refs hate us. Dog ate my homework. You own Pittsburgh. Right? How about that yesterday?
That's it. Yeah. But PAC, BPI didn't get that wrong.
Yeah, they did. I wrote it down yesterday.
No. No, BPI never. BPI, friendly reminder. Regardless of the outcome, BPI is always right. Don't forget that.
You're correct. I forgot about the friends of BPI. I still think we should do a bit on this and just put somebody behind a dark silhouette, black covering. You just hear a digitized voice, friends of BPI. That clandestine group in Bristol has a corner office and apparently free parking and all they can eat at the cafeteria that comes up with all these crazy percentages of why Team A is going to beat Team B, and they're never right. Never right.
Right.
Or, excuse, no, they're, Jimmy, they're right. Never wrong. Excuse me. Let me rephrase that for the BPI corner office. Yeah. Ridiculous.
That's it.
Crazy. But what about NC State, though, yesterday?
So,
Can we get to that game?
Unbelievable. I mean, it just goes to show you that we can't always foretell storylines. I mean, NC State just has not played well at all, and you get into the game, and all of a sudden you're looking up going, what is that, up 6, up 8? Pitt's laboring in the – I mean, you saw this. Pitt labored at times offensively. You weren't sure how the Wolfpack was going to respond. Big loss against Duke, hadn't played well during the week. Next thing you know, they got some things going. I thought Cam Hayes played his best game of the year. And Funderburk was really good inside. Good DJ Funderburk. Good Cam Hayes. Nice support from the bench. Guess what happened? And then in the final sequence, though, let me also add this. Pittsburgh rallied, had a chance at the end, and it was not good. Just didn't get really what I thought was an acceptable look at all. Here it is. I mean, that's Tony's attempt, and then Champagny, and by the time Brown puts it back up on the glass, the horn sounds.
Wes, I don't mean to be overly
critical. That's just not what you want.
I don't mean to be overly critical. That might be the worst game-ending half-court possession I've ever seen. You got three attempts at the basket. It's yet to hit the rim, the basket, and the net, anything. I mean, goodness gracious. Listen, if you're NC State,
the Panthers responded.
If you're NC State, you take the win, you're laughing all over the bank, but that's a tough loss for Pitt. You win that game, you're back to 500. Oh. You look down the schedule, you get to see NC State again. You got a couple of Clemson, you got a game with Wake. Mm-hmm. You can kind of play yourself back into it a little bit, but you just cannot lose to NC State at home without Devin Daniels and the way the Pac's been playing. That is a bad loss for Pitt, and I'm being kind, right? And here's the other thing, too. Let me just say one thing.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see the game live because I was working. But when Dan Dockage told me what the score was, and he mentioned it to me with about 11 minutes or 10 minutes ago in the game, I looked up the stats and saw that Champagny only shot a couple shots. And I'm like, how is arguably the best player in the league, player of the year, not getting any shots? Now, I'm not a coach, but that doesn't even make any sense to me.
Well, and he's having quiet double-doubles. He had 18 and 10.
Right.
Okay? But it's quiet. It's an 18 and 10, and you're like, oh, okay, he ended up with a double-double, which, by the way, was his 10th of the year. But it's not a pronounced. It's not a dominant 18 and 10. It's like you remember DJ Funderburk's 16 points. You remember Hellum's 17. You remember the 9 assists from Cam Hayes more than you remember the double-double. Why? Because, to your point, he gets 11 shots. He's 3 of 11 from the floor. And Jeff Capel said it earlier this week, and I firmly believe he's right. Champagny is being guarded differently. Since coming back from the knee injury, he blasted off. You remember he blasted off right after he came back, right?
Yeah.
And in the 4 games after the knee injury, he was sensational. But now he's being guarded differently. Well, when you're in those situations, you got to find help. And guys have to – I mean, I saw it happen, in my years at Georgia Tech. Like, Matt Harpering would be guarded differently when he became the showpiece for Bobby Cremins. Well, you got to re-rack the ball back to Matt Harpering somehow. You got to get him the ball back in a scoring position. Let him go be that player for you. 11 shots from the floor and finishing with 18 points. He only makes three field goals. He spent a bunch of time at the free throw line. Yeah. You and I both know that. That's got to – and when Pitt's playing at their best, he's going to get a lot of shots and he's going to make more than three field goals. The three field goals is far more concerning to me than the 11 shots. The 11 shots, yeah, does it need to be 12 or 13? Probably on every night, but it's also got to be more than three.
Right.
Because if he gets, like, say, 6 of 12 or 6 of 13 from the floor, he's scoring 24 points.
That's right.
He's not scoring 18, and that's a difference in the ballgame.
Totally right. By the way, Pitt has now played themselves into the pile of teams that needs to win it all in Greensboro to get to the tournament. I mean, you just can't lose that game. I mean, you know, if you are thinking NCAA tournament, what's our path? Well, your path now is to go crazy in Greensboro and win it all. That's your path. Yeah. That's where that loss is. All that was going on, though, Wes, last night, Jalen Johnson's taking his ball and going to the NBA. Wish him the best. Yeah. Duke looked energized to me last night. Duke, defensively, for the second game in a row, got after somebody. They got after NC State Saturday on the road, and right out of the gate, they got after Wake Forest last night. And next thing you know, it's 29-13, and you go walk the dog, Clifford, do whatever you want. That thing was over. And Duke looked like they had a little bounce
Steve
in the
Forbes
step.
Could have gone and walked your dog, too.
Well, he did, because he got tossed last night. But I thought Duke had a little energy. And that defense, let me just point out again, after giving up back-to-back 90s in losses, their last two games, they have given up a grand stinking total of 113 points in their last two games. Why was I preaching last week about, hey, start slapping the floor, playing some D, getting after people?
There you go.
The last two games, defensively, has looked energized. They have looked engaged. They have looked focused. They have looked like they got something to play for. And with Jalen Johnson's news this week, you know what? I thought Duke looked awfully good last night. I really did.
Let me just – the old Coach K mind tricks are starting to kick in here, aren't they, Pac? To guard, starting to slap the floor.
That team last night didn't look anything like – any Duke team we've seen this week, with the exception of the week when they wanted, you know, beat Georgia Tech and Clemson, and you thought they had turned the corner. But with the Johnson dude out now, and hey, rearview mirror, wish him the best. Brotherhood's moving forward. I thought Duke looked engaged last night. That looked like a team that could cause you a problem.
Consecutive double-digit wins for the Blue Devils for the first time this year. I've been waiting all year to try and find the comparable in Duke history of recent vintage to draw the line with Matthew Hurt, and I was given it last night in a note when I read that Hurt was 8 of 9 from the floor and had 21 points. And he had 20 points on 85% from the floor on the road, and he was the first since Ryan Kelly in 2011, ironically also against Wake Forest. Here's the thing. That's the comparable to Matthew Hurt. Ryan Kelly, Pack. Remember Ryan Kelly?
Yeah. Well, I really didn't until you brought it up, but you're right.
I mean, that's the comparable to Matthew Hurt, and he was sensational last night. But here's the other thing, too. I don't want people to – don't get some of this confused. See that number 15 running right there in the middle? Mm-hmm. See that? Okay, Matthew Hurt, yeah, make shots from the floor, man. You're the guy. That number 15 running the floor last night was a problem inside.
He was. Getting better every week.
He was slapping shots off the glass, and Mark Williams had a ton of injury and energy last night. Here's the thing. If they get any production at the offensive end from him, but he plays reliable defense, confident defense for Duke, that changes their whole dynamic. The whole dynamic.
Here's the other thing. 6 turnovers. That's all he had last night. Well, we've watched Duke kick it around the yard a couple times, right? I mean, on the road, playing good defense, making shots, not turning it over, looked like they were confident. Almost looked like a burden had been lifted watching them play last night. And, hey, they got up big, and it was just like, man, this is fun. This is what it's supposed to be about. And, you know, hey, I know it was NC State and Wake Forest before people start going, all right, Pac, they'll get a test this week with Virginia. But just the eye test alone, they look like a totally different team their last two outings. in terms of getting after people on the defensive end. Totally different. So
totally
if you're a
agree.
Duke fan,
totally
you're a Duke
agree.
Fan, I think you feel like, hey, is this an uphill climb? It is. You put yourself in that position, but you got to build momentum to get to Greensboro to go on a run. And they're going to have some opportunities, including their next one, like I said, against Virginia, which will be a big game coming up this weekend.
You bet. Quickly, Chapel Hill last night. All the ills of no double-figure scoring were basically erased in the first half last night. Dayron Sharp led the parade last night. He had 15. Garrison Brooks, 11 and 13 rebounds. Kerwin Walton, 14. Walker Kessler had 10. Carolina made it look easy, forced Northeastern into 16 turnovers, which were cashed in for 22 points. They beat the Huskies by 20. However, not the biggest news involving this game.
That's right.
The biggest news out of this game came from yesterday morning on this very show. Coach Roy.
All right, one last thing, guys. If we play well tonight, we'll do this every day on game day. If we get our butts beat, I'll never see the rest of my life on game day. So just remember, not that I'm superstitious. So.
Deal. Hey, book it.
So we got to look at the schedule, our Monday through Friday, and Packer and Durham, along with Roy. It's going to be the name of the show, right?
Yeah. Packer, Durham, and Roy.
Tuesday got
feeling
canceled.
Feeling pretty good about next week, are you?
Well, Tuesday got canceled with BC. Maybe Roy will put another Twitter ad out. We'll get another game in the middle of the week, and Roy can come co-host with us. So far, so good for Coach Williams.
Yeah.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Dan McDonald, outstanding, great coach, Louisville baseball. You heard
friend of the show.
Baseball.
Friend of the show.
So excited that baseball is getting cranked up. Love it. Love it, love it, love it. But, Wes Durham, FSU basketball. Here we go again. Old Leonard down there just winning a bunch of games, kicking Virginia all over the yard. Selection committee sound asleep on Saturday.
Didn't we do this?
We do this every year, don't we?
Didn't we do this?
Seems like it.
Didn't we just do this in January?
Yep.
AP then they go voters. On COVID pause and you can't get them in the top four. I mean, what are we doing?
People just don't pay any attention to Florida State, and it's a bad.
All right. They
bad
got left
move.
Off. They got left off the selection committee's top 16 over the weekend. Florida State. Okay.
Crazy.
And again, I don't know who's asleep on the committee. I don't know.
How about all of them?
What is transpiring? Well, you know, some of them represent the ACC, so we don't want to throw everybody.
I will. I mean, it's the committee's voice. I mean, come on. Florida State, not one of the 16 best teams in the country, is almost laughable. Look at this group.
All right. Here are the three and the fours, right?
Yeah.
They just beat Virginia by 21.
Right. They're a three seed.
Pack, I like them against everybody on this list, including MIZZOU.
I mean, that's laughable. I'm sorry.
Mizzou.
I mean, Missouri
that is
just,
laughable.
I mean, Missouri just got done losing to Ole Miss and Georgia. No, hey, I'm not talking football. I'm talking basketball. And Missouri's in front of Florida State. I mean, please, don't insult us anymore. Seriously, don't. Don't. I mean, it's embarrassing. Florida State. If Florida State's not one of the 16 best teams in America, I mean, come on. Who are you fooling? You're not watching. You're not paying attention.
All right. Couple things here. Florida State already has four more wins than BPI thought they would have.
Well, that's no big deal. BPI's
and it's 7-2 against Quad 1 and Quad 2. BPI is always right. So take that into account. Now, here in order is the way BPI thinks Florida State would go against some of the threes and the fours. Okay? So let's start with Iowa. Okay, Luca Garza, the whole bit.
Good club.
How would Florida State handle that? BPI would favor Iowa to win.
You know, BPI probably hasn't seen Iowa's transitional defense. BPI wouldn't even know what that is, or any of the friends of BPI. Again, if my life depended on it, I have Florida State and Iowa. That's an easy call for me.
Okay. All right. How about Virginia?
I just saw the game Monday.
I know you did.
I just saw it. It wasn't competitive.
BPI would favor Virginia to win by 2.7.
Yeah, that's well. They again, BPI never wrong. I mean, heaven forbid we actually see the game, much less what the computer and the smart guys up there in their clandestine corner in Bristol come up with.
Okay,
that's crazy.
Maybe not our best example. Let's try Texas Tech.
Oh yeah, let's play Texas.
Let's try
Tech.
Texas Tech.
Right,
Chris Beard.
Love Chris Beard.
Red Raiders. Guns up.
Love them. Yeah. Great coach. Really good team. And they would not
Texas Tech.
They would not beat Florida State. They would not beat Florida State. Please.
No. Like Texas Tech, but I don't like them as much as I like Florida State.
Okay? I love Chris Beard. I think Chris Beard's a great coach.
Yeah. Good coach.
Florida State's a good team.
Now, a little closer to home. How about the Vols?
Oh.
How about the Vols? How about Rick Barnes?
Trying to score?
I just don't see this. I don't see Tennessee beating Florida State. Now, would there be athletes on display?
Oh, sure.
No doubt.
Hey, listen, Tennessee.
I watched Tennessee last night.
They have a very good defensive team. I like their team. They just can't score. Can't score.
Right. So, Lon Kruger.
Love Lon
Kruger. Helped you get a steak from Greenberg.
One of my all-time favorite coaches.
Lon Kruger's one of our favorites.
And let me tell you something.
We actually talked to Lon Kruger about all that. And he's a big fan of ours.
His team is red hot. They may be as hot as Florida State from that standpoint.
That's correct.
I wouldn't sneeze on Oklahoma now. I think Oklahoma, Florida State right now, tonight, if they played tonight, would be a great game. That'd be a great game.
Okay. BPI would favor Oklahoma by 0.3.
And that'd be great news for Florida State.
Right. Okay. What about the Mountaineers? It's also a close fit.
Well, I'd love to see that game, too. Huggy Bear. Love to see that game.
Really good. Really good game.
Now, you're talking about some athletes and some points.
These two... Yeah, these two or three that we're getting, these two that we've talked about, one more, I would really like to see these games.
See, this would be bad news for Florida State because BPI has him as a favorite. That'd be good news for Huggy Bear.
Right.
That'd be a good game. Love to see that one too. By the way, Oklahoma, West Virginia. West Virginia and Oklahoma just played a great game in Morgantown over the weekend. I mean, those are two good clubs. All these teams are good. I'm not trying to dismiss anybody that can't play Dead in a Cowboy movie. They're all good. They're all going to be in the tournament. But the fact that Florida State's not in the Sweet 16 and the NCAA is a joke. Joke.
Yeah. All right. How about the Horns? How about Texas?
Good defensive team.
BPI says Florida State would win by 0.3.
Texas got a good club. Shaka's done a nice job. Like I said, these are all good clubs. You know, and you know what? Yep. You may actually get a chance to see these games late March when it really matters.
Right. Now, remember, we told you that Florida State was 7-2 against the top two quads. If you can believe this, Missouri was in the top 16 on Saturday, and they are 6-6 against the top two quads, and Florida State was nowhere to be found.
That's a joke. Missouri just lost to a team. Missouri just lost to a team in Georgia that just gave up 115 points. I'm not making that up. They gave up. They weren't playing Nick Saban. Now, this isn't basketball. Bama's good, too, by the way. They gave up a buck 15, and that team just beat Missouri.
It was like the Memphis Tams rolled in there.
God. The Atlanta Hawks are trying to wonder how
Georgia lost to Georgia lost to the Spirit of St. Louis, the San Diego Conquistadors, the Memphis Tams, Squires.
Florida State playing Missouri in my backyard tomorrow would not even be a competitive game. It wouldn't be competitive.
I just think that whatever's going on with Florida State, the wake-up factor needs to happen. Okay? And I don't know if it's because they've been on and off and on and off or whatever the situation is, but I'm going to tell you this now. Do not sleep on this crowd.
But, you know, Wes, like the net rankings, we were laughing about this yesterday afternoon.
Yeah.
Colgate is 11th in the net. Colgate.
Stop it.
I'll look it up.
Come on.
Look
I
it
know,
up.
But come on.
You know how many quad I one know. Games they've played this year? Forget how many they've won. How many they've played? Zero. Now, how are they 11th? I don't even understand. That's... The BPI is goofy. The net's goofy. That's all I'm going to tell you.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham podcast.
Packer and Durham. I'm excited because it's baseball season in the ACC. We're finally getting baseball back after what happened last year, Wes, because that just simply was not fair. What happened to baseball, softball, and all the spring sports? It stunk last year.
Well, and one of our favorites on this program from even in the old Central Radio days is Dan McDonald, who gets ready to start his 15th year as the head baseball coach at the University of Louisville, and Mac's good enough to join us this morning. We'll get to the weirdness of college baseball in the process of our visit here, but it's always great to see you. I know you're glad to have the sport back. I know you're glad to have some semblance of normal, but let's start with what is the new normal. How has practice been? Has it been just like the old days, Dan, or are we a little different now?
Well, it's definitely a lot different behind the scenes, but I've said, you know, publicly, if you just were able to sit in the stands and watch us, you know, practice in the fall, scrimmage on a Saturday or scrimmage in this preseason, it would look like a normal year. What's amazing is what's going on behind the scenes. All the testing, all the protocols, checking in, temperatures, mask, distancing. From setting up our team meetings to how are we going to do chapel this year to scouting reports to where we're going to sit on the bus. It's logistically, it's just really bizarre all the things that are going on. But for the players, every day, at least they get to hit and throw and run around and play baseball.
Dan, it's one thing to have to deal with a pandemic. How about if we just go ahead and put a polar vortex in there on top of it just to have some fun? I mean it's just like, what's next? Locusts? I mean, what else could probably hit you square in the between the eyes before we get the first pitch?
Yeah, as baseball coaches, we're pretty used to it, but I come on, I always say it's 70 and sunny in Louisville, and this storm is messing up my recruiting pitch.
It's crazy, man.
You get a scenario, though, in college baseball that's a little weird. Let's be honest. The season gets shut down. Then the complications, I say complications, the interesting relationship between college baseball and the pro game changes when they reduce the draft. Take me through some of those discussions, because for profile programs like yourself and others in this conference, all of a sudden, you got guys who had expectation of being drafted that might not be drafted that then have to make, as I was told by one of your colleagues in the league, blind decisions. That's tough, right?
Yeah. Looking back last year, I mean, you dealt with all the frustration of the season ending. And unfortunately, it wasn't like, hey, guys, just take a couple months off and start playing golf. It seemed like I was on a conference call every day. We were having discussions with Major League Baseball. Amongst all the colleges, coaches were talking. We were talking to the NCAA, because more so than probably any sport, this draft has such an impact on our roster. And so from 40 rounds to 120 guys getting drafted every year with about 800 signing, we were now looking at, yes, five rounds, 160 picks. And even though there's good to that, maybe selfishly, the fear was, uh-oh, what's going to happen to our rosters? How are we going to handle this with our scholarships? What about all the kids coming out of high school? And fortunately, you know, the NCAA gave us some wiggle room, gave us some relief with the seniors that wanted to come back, expanded the rosters a little bit. But it was still, you feel like a general manager. You feel like you're trying to maneuver, you know, the salary cap and and all these things that, you know, we're dealing with scholarships and limitations and just the mental state of these kids. They wanted to sign. They were ready to play pro ball. And now, wait a second, I'm coming back under this unique circumstance. And so it was a lot of counseling, a lot of conversations with those draft eligible juniors and seniors, as well as all those high school kids. Yeah, hey, coach, what's it going to look like now when I show up there? And you know, it, as we always say, it's not like we could say, hey, guys, let's look back to 2005 when we went through this. Like, it's just uncharted waters.
Dan, you guys always seem to reload. I know you lose some great arms in the draft. What does the staff look like as far as projecting for 21?
Well, fortunately, you know, we got Roger Williams. You know, I'll say the best pitching coach in the country. And what Roger's used to doing is we're always, you know, turning over a lot of arms and weekend arms and closers. And so it's always guys' roles expand. You know, maybe as a freshman, you might be a midweek starter. Maybe you're a reliever. I'm not saying you can't be a weekend starter as a freshman, but we've seen this year after year. Detmers went from throwing on a Tuesday to throwing on a Friday. Adam Wolf from throwing in relief to a couple years to throwing on a Friday. And so this year, kind of our team, the pitching staff is Glenn Albanese and Jack Perkins and Adam Elliott and Michael Kieran, guys that have thrown a lot out of the bullpen. You know, now some of them are going to be starters. You know, Luke Smith is the one constant that returns to get a weekend starter back. We feel very fortunate. But Roger will do a great job. We got talented arms. As always, you know, they're moving in and out of different roles. And just like we tell the position players, the more positions you can play, the more valuable you become as a pitcher. The more different ways you can have success, the more valuable you become, not just for us, but as you cross the line into pro baseball.
Well, one of the best players in the league is going to be your catcher, and that obviously helps. Henry Davis is a tremendous talent. I know you're excited to have his leadership too.
I'm so proud of him. You know, we're both from New York, so we get teased a little bit because we got a lot of Midwest kids here and a lot of Chicago and Ohio and Wisconsin, you know, all those Indiana kids and everybody. So I'm proud of him because seeing where he was at when he came out of high school, what a great job Coach Schneider, our hitting coach, has done with Henry, and he also coaches the catchers. But also just how hard Henry has worked. It's really fun coaching kids who want to be great. He came in with a lot of fire, a lot of gusto, a lot of energy. And as a Northeast kid that was just raw, to see where he's at now, you know, recognized as one of the better players in college baseball, I'm looking forward to the success and watching him play and compete this year.
Dan, I know we've talked about this back in the radio days, but I've always thought that, number one, you've got a great national brand, which you get all the credit for, and your players and staff and everything else. But you've also done a really good job to say, guess what? We can go down to Florida and Georgia in the Southeast to get players, but we are also going to take advantage of our location to get really good players in the Northeast and the Midwest. And you just rattled off a bunch of names from all over the place. And again, I think you and your staff get a lot of credit because you've been able to throw and cast that net and go in many different directions, which a lot of schools I don't think have that ability to do.
Well, I learned a long time ago, and baseball coaches know this, it is what it is. We have to be regionally active. And yes, if you're in Florida, Texas, or California, you have large states that you can recruit from, large southern states, and in-state tuition helps. You know, Kentucky's not a huge state by any means, but we circle that 5-6 hour radius. And so even though we had to cross some state lines and have out-of-state tuition, it's a family sport and you play 4 or 5 games a week. So let's get kids from this part of the country. And the Northeast is a little Florida. The thing I always say about the Northeast and Florida is there's a lot of kids, and those kids are willing to go just about anywhere. But all the other Midwest states that I mentioned, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 hours, it's good for families. And as I always say, to come south for those families is even a bonus.
All right, let's go to the scheduling process here because we've talked to a lot of coaches. I know that's where the bulk of these Zoom calls ended up. You know, the construction of the schedule for the league. I know coaches have a big voice in baseball on putting this together. Are you pleased with that process? And does it look like what you guys, you know, kind of hashed out in those Zoom calls?
You know, we got a lot accomplished. I mean, we're baseball coaches, so I don't know if we're ever satisfied. we would have liked to have had a 56-game schedule, but just due to a conference decision and some cutbacks, you know, obviously with COVID and everything, we're down to 50. But I thought we made the right decision in going to 36 games. I think the more games you play in your league, the more confidence you have, the more control you feel you have over this thing. And I think we're going to look back at the end of the season and go, that was smart. Just because of, we all have everyone's best interests at heart. And as we expand the dugouts, as I say, when Boston College comes to play at Louisville and we've expanded our dugout and gone down the line a little bit, yes, I want to play them in a three-game series, but I need them leaving here playing the next weekend, whether that's at Duke or at Florida State or wherever. And I think we're looking out for each other. We're holding each other accountable. We're making sure we're doing the right testing. And it's not going to be an exact science, and we realize we're going to have hiccups. But I think when it's all said and done, a 50-game schedule with 36 against the ACC is really, it's going to be the most challenging schedule we've ever played.
I know this much, Dan, after watching college football and watching college basketball, and you know this sitting right there in Louisville, I'd almost sign up for 35 games right now and say, guess what, I'll take that. Ask no questions, right? You just know it's just not going to be easy regardless of everybody doing all the right things. It's just tough. It's hard to do.
Exactly. And we challenge our kids to make good decisions. We haven't been perfect. We've had some hiccups. You hope at this point, you know, that they see the work going on behind the scenes. They see the administration, the medical staff, what everybody is doing to help these kids play the game that they love to play. I know at this point it's real. They appreciate it. And so now we all just got to be on the same page, do our part, and hope to play baseball. I think it could be great on many fronts. As the vaccination starts to get out there, as the sun will come back soon and springtime is here, I think baseball, college baseball, could be very healing for many. And maybe not just college baseball. How about softball and all the outdoor spring sports?
Amen to that. We wish you the best. Yeah. Stay healthy.
Good stuff. Thanks, right, Mac. Thanks, always guys. Appreciate the time. Best of luck, okay?
Okay, thank you. Be safe.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. Thursdays mean one thing on this show during hoop season. It is time for accounting. Everybody on social media will take their cheap shots, and if I find you, I'll call you out. That's how it works. Wes, are you ready to roll?
Sure.
You don't sound very excited.
Pretty excited, can't you tell?
I could tell. Can't that was tell? Not the energy level I was looking for. There has to be enthusiasm accounting.
I made a change at the top. How's that? I've made a change at the top. After a 21-point win on Monday night, I have put Florida State above Virginia. Yes, I know the Cavaliers still have the lead in the loss column. I've put the Noles 1, Cavaliers 2, Hokies 3. Man, we're looking forward to seeing you again at some point. Hey, Louisville, looking forward to seeing you. Hey, Clemson, looking forward to seeing you at some point. Georgia Tech 6 ahead of Carolina and Duke. Syracuse 9. I got Notre Dame 10, State ahead of Pittsburgh. Wake, Miami, Boston College. There you go.
You're going to be very disappointed. After seeing that list, you're going to be
the same.
Very
Are we almost the same?
You're going to be surprised. Now, let me just, for the record, before we unveil this, folks think that we always compare notes. We never compare notes. Ever compare notes. So with that said, it's time for my accounting plus the Sweet 16 this week. Let it rip. At the top, I saw it my own eyes Monday night. You can't beat somebody by 21 and say, yeah, I'm going to put that team in front of me. No, Florida State's number one. Sorry, Virginia. You had a shot. I still like the Hoos. I think they're the two best teams. Hokies, waiting for them to play at 3. I kept Clemson at 4. Why? They've got more quad 1 and quad 2 wins than anybody else in the league. That's why they're 4.
They do.
Louisville is 5. At some point in time in February, I'd like to see them play. I kept the Heels at 6. Look who moved up to 7. You know what? They looked pretty good their last two times out. Starting to see signs of life in Durham. Georgia Tech's 8. Man, if they had beaten Clemson Friday night, Georgia Tech would not be 8. Syracuse is 9.
No.
Wes, I think we're exactly the same moving forward. Notre Dame, 10.
There we
NC
are.
State moved up a little bit. Compliments of beating Pitt, who fell behind him at 12. Pitt, I can't figure Pitt out. Wake's 13. The Swiss, Miami, 14. Boston College will stay at 15 for the rest of the year. And 16 this week is Josh Pastner's cracked face shield. Right here. Bam! That makes you a sweet 16 right there. And he put it back on for the second half and a gut-wrenching loss. So the cracked face shield by Josh Pastner makes it to the sweet 16. So there you have it, Wes. Ours are very similar this week. Very similar.
Yeah. I think there's only one or two adjustments in the whole deal there.
Yeah,
I think the only changes is that combination of Duke, Carolina, and Georgia Tech. We got them in a different order.
Clemson,
I got
Louisville.
Clemson 5. You got Clemson 4. Yeah.
Clemson's got a better body of work than Louisville. Plus, they beat them. You know, that's the other thing. I like Louisville's team. I need to see them play, especially when Malik Williams comes back. I think they can make some noise.
Oh,
but
Pac.
I was so bummed out that Syracuse-Louisville got canceled. That was the game I was so most forward to watching yesterday, and we didn't get it. It was
let
a
me
huge
just ask
game.
You this. It was. All right. Let me ask you this. Virginia Tech, Florida State's already been banged.
Stinks.
Right? For Saturday.
Right. Stinks.
Florida State's now going to go play Pittsburgh, who was supposed to play Clemson.
Right.
Okay. Carolina, Louisville. You hope?
What's BPI say? The BPI thinks we're going to have the game. Then
BPI
we won't
say
have the
they're
game.
Going to play.
If the BPI says we're having it,
that's
we're
what
not
we need
playing
BPI
the game.
To answer.
Yeah, whatever they say, I'm going the other way. I'm worried about that game though. I mean, the fact that Louisville and Syracuse couldn't go last night. I mean, I hope we get these games. I mean, we've lost so many games that we want to see. That's why we were all excited about Virginia, Florida State Monday night. Hey, we got two of the big boys getting after it, and Florida State put on a show. But I want to see Florida State, Virginia Tech. I mean, we haven't seen the Hokie. I said the other day, the Hokies' COVID issues, we've lost them playing Florida State. We've lost them playing, North Carolina, Louisville, Virginia game. I mean, they've really kind of missed out on games of note that we want to see. The good news is their body of work put them in a position to be okay. But, man, those are some – it's unfortunate we're not going to get those games.
Well, and they can't. They can't validate themselves because they're not playing. So now if, you know, you get Virginia Tech, and let's be honest, the exception being the second half that Michigan put on Wisconsin the other day and the entire Florida State-NC State game that was played when the Noles shot 71% from the floor, outside of that, every team nearly, almost by rule, has struggled coming out of the COVID pause.
Yep.
And look, I'm not going to debate the value of it, but that committee room is going to be unlike any other because somebody's going to come off a COVID pause, play one or two regular season games remaining, and then lose in their tournament, and then, you know, they're going to slide in the NCAA bracket. That's just that's the nature of the beast, the way the tournament committee works sometimes. They'll go from 6 to 10 or, you know, 7 to 9 or whatever the case may be, and that's unfortunate. To be honest, and let's hope it doesn't happen to too many ACC teams because, again, as I said last week or earlier this week, my biggest fear will be if the ACC gives the committee a clear path, a line to draw to say everybody above goes, everybody below stays. And, you know, right now we just got to get some games played.
Well, I think that's one of the reasons you saw North Carolina play Northeastern. And a lot of folks are like, well, why would you play that game? Well, you got to play games. I mean – you know, just think about this. If North Carolina didn't go to Twitter to find a game, you know, they go the whole week without a ball game. All right. And now you're looking about
Pack. They may have to go find one next week.
Well, that's where I'm going. I mean, Louisville is, I don't know if they're going to play that game Saturday or not. We already know next Tuesday night's game with BC has been postponed. You know, you start getting to late February right. and your body of work has one quad win. Hey, you want opportunities to kind of build the resume a little bit. When all these games start getting postponed, you know, you kind of play yourself by not playing into a tough situation. And, you know, there's only two teams that I know of that have gone on an extended period of time in which they really haven't been felt in the rankings, and that's number two and number three in the country. Baylor hasn't played in weeks. Michigan had not played in weeks till Sunday. And again, they played great in the second half to knock off Wisconsin on the road. But, you know, they still kind of stayed number two, number three, respectively, from a national perspective. But this is going to be the challenge moving forward for everybody. ACC, SEC, Big Ten, Big 12, Pac 12, anybody else in between, as we get into March. It is going to be very, very difficult to pull this off.
And you have to wonder, based on what, you know, our visit with Jay Billis yesterday, you have to wonder if when these teams get back, if we're not talking about full isolation of Tier 1 going down the stretch back.
That's what Jay was talking about. I mean, he said, hey, there's just too much money at stake.
We've got to be concerned about it.
Yeah.
Right.
The Packer and Durham Podcast.